All right, at this time, the chairperson should briefly qualify requirements for chairing a meeting at Central Orlando Group. Saturday night speaker meeting, our 1 year of continuous sobriety. Have Central as your home group and attend a group conscious meeting. I'm Brian. I'm an alcoholic.
Sobriety
date's April 23rd, 1989, and that's through God's grace and some work in Alcoholics Anonymous, a sponsor, and following directions. And through spiritual intervention, when I got here, I didn't want to follow directions. But of course, as my sponsor pointed out, look at my track record. And, you know, jail, jobs, relationships, I gave a lot of things away for alcohol. And today, because of Alcoholics Anonymous, I have a life beyond my wildest dreams. But it requires some work, action, sponsors, steps, meetings, working with others, praying, sponsors, steps, meetings, working with others, good days and bad days. And if you're an alcoholic like me, this place will save your life if you do the work. I'm thankful for letting me chair the meeting.
Thank you.
And the group asked me to remind you to please make sure your phones are off and refrain from moving around or talking while the speaker is sharing. Introduce the speaker. Oh, well, where could I start from? Well, some people in these rooms talk the talk. Some people walk the walk. She walks the walk. And what happens? She has God in AA first, her service commitments, her sponsor, her girls, her family, and then if I'm lucky, me. But you know what? I am grateful for that, because if I was higher up on the list, I'd be cut up into the little pieces and fed to the fish. So you'll see people around here who have the smile in their eyes. She's one of them. And what happens is she does God's work in these rooms, and God takes care of her life outside the rooms. So not wasting any more time, and plus, she's my wife. If you didn't know that by now. So I'd like to introduce Robin.
Hi everyone, I'm Robin. I'm an alcoholic. And I think he was insinuating that it would be me cutting him up into small pieces, which is true. That is often a threat. And he always says if he ever dies suddenly, everybody needs to check the lake. So, all right. Again, my name's Robin. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm so honored to be here. And it's really scary up here, just so y'all know. So if you see me shaking for a little bit, hopefully that will stop. Before I speak, I always go in and pray on the dirty floor. There's something about that. And tonight, not only did I pray on the dirty floor, I even hugged myself a Puerto Rican before I got up here. So we'll see what God comes up with. So anyway, I'm so glad we're not a glum lot. If you're new, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, my life was over. I got here when I was 22 years old, and that is not my sobriety date. My sobriety date is January 26, 2002. And as we go on, I'll share the story of how I went in and out of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm supposed to tell you in a general way, which I've never been general, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now, briefly, and I've never been brief, so we'll see what happens with that. But, you know, before I start, I just want to, you know, say that Alcoholics Anonymous has given me a wonderful life. And, you know, if you're new, just hang on, because I really didn't believe anything they told me when I got here and I was finally willing. But I did believe one thing, and they kept saying, don't leave before the miracle happens and keep coming back. And those are two things I just kept doing. And because of that, I've been given a wonderful life. And I'm so honored to be standing up here and to be able to look into the crowd. I do have my contacts on so I can see you. All the people that have touched my life, all the girls that I've had the opportunity to work steps with and go to dinner and so forth, and the men and other people that watched me when I came in, and I know they bet that I wouldn't make it, but I did. good. And, you know, I'm just so honored. You know, my phone rang off the hook today of people saying good luck. You know, we love you. Before I got to AA, nobody was calling saying good luck, I love you. They were saying, please don't ever call me again, or, oh my God, you know what you did last night. So I'm so glad. We'll tell a couple of those stories. Mary wants a couple juicy things, so we'll see what comes out. But anyways, I always say I was born irritable, restless, and discontent, and it's true. My birthday is New Year's Eve, and since I can remember, I was PO'd. I was mad because I didn't get to bring cookies to school, and no one ever celebrated my birthday. They always celebrated New Year's Eve, and I remember when I was a kid, I'd be like, you know, where's the cake? Everybody else got a cake, and they'd be like, well, we're busy, and see you later, and be good for the babysitter. But I always felt cheated. Period. That's really the best way to describe it. I felt like I got the shaft. And I hear a lot of people, you know, in the rooms that say they felt the same way. I just never felt like I belonged anywhere. Even though if you saw me, you would have thought I was very, very happy. I'm from Rochester, Michigan. Grew up in the Midwest. I have two older brothers and a little sister. And, you know, I'm from an alcoholic family. My father was a big drinker. And, you know, I want to state that when I first came into Alcoholics Anonymous and spoke, I would have if it was a 45-minute speak, I would have took 40 minutes just to tell you what an asshole my dad was. And, you know, the longer I'm sober, the better my childhood has gotten. I had a wonderful childhood. I really did. When I get an opportunity to hear other people's story, I was a very lucky girl because my dad might not have been really good to me, but I had a wonderful mother who loved me, and every day that woman told me that I was somebody special and I could be somebody. But I have that, I have something wrong with my perception, and so most of my childhood, all I ever focused on was the fact that that guy didn't like me, and I never really paid attention to all the good things my mom said about me. And it wasn't until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous that you guys told me I had a perception problem and that I could change that. And I'm forever grateful that, you know, today when I think some crazy things, you know, I can believe you when you go, it's not true, Robin. Why don't you think this way? That's the benefit of having a sponsor. She always kind of guides me in that direction. But anyway, so I was raised in this crazy family. We lived in a nice home, and I never wanted anything as far as, you know, financial. But the one thing I wanted was my dad to say, I love you, and to have a conversation with me. And I longed for that, and I fought for that, and, you know, it never happened, okay? But so I tried all kinds of other things to get it to happen, like, you know, date the guy he didn't like, and did all kinds of crazy things just to make him mad. If you aren't going to love me, then I'll make you mad. As my sponsor said when I did my fifth step, just keep putting a V there, Robin. And when we got all done, I'm like, what does V stand for? And she said, vindictive. So I was vindictive from a very young age. I was also taught to smile and act like nothing's going on. You know, my dad, you never knew what he was going to be like. He liked to come home from work, take off his suit, throw on his blue jeans, and suck down a bottle of rum. And he was never very nice when he did that. And my mom always said, the best way to get a drunk to go to bed is to feed him. And so we ate early many nights in hopes that guy would go to bed. And, you know, I don't know why I irritated him so bad, maybe because I was just like him, but I was just always at the wrong place at the wrong time. When he was swinging, I always seemed to be standing right there, you know. And my older brother had shared with me, you know, how could you ever have forgiven him for all the times he, you know, smacked you? And, you know, and I shared with my brother that, you know, I was there at the wrong time. You know, I just happened to be the stupid one standing right there. You know, I should have sat away from him at the dinner table, not next to him. But, you know, it was what it was. And later on in life, what would happen is I would drink enough to become just like my dad. And, you know, today I know that my dad was a sick man. He was sick, 30-some years old, 4 children, crazy job, trying to make everybody think he had it together, and the truth is he didn't. He was in the grips of alcoholism, and when he'd come home from work, he'd take his thing he loved most, which was booze, and then whatever would happen, and today I know that about my dad. I know that he was a wonderful man, and, you know, every time I have his ring on today, and, you know, whenever I speak, I always know that he's up there watching. You know, I wished he would have lived long enough to see me get sober, because there were many nights he laid in bed and prayed that I'd get help someday. So, anyway, so I was like any other kid, you know. I've been this tall since I was 10, and I'm short, but I was 5'3 with the last name Tall Man, and I was very developed, and the boys loved me. They all came to right here. They were always smiling right here, and I was very uncomfortable with myself, and you know, I just smiled all the time, and I still smile all the time, but if I smile real big, something's wrong with me. And, you know, I didn't know what to do with myself, and my family believed that it was always good to drink at home. They would much rather have their children drinking at home than out driving around in cars or behind buildings or in cemeteries or wherever. I was there too, but you know, we were allowed to drink at home, and so alcohol was always around. I don't remember like the first time I got drunk. I remember my grandmother used to make cream de mint sundaes though, and I loved those, and I ate mine, and I licked your bowl too. I was the kid that always said, "Mom, I need another bottle of NyQuil." You know, of course, she had no idea. She is the queen of denial, and so she never knew what was going on. She just smiled a lot too, and just prayed. I know she prayed a lot that life one day would be okay, and took many years for that for her. But you know, I was just a, you know, regular kid, and in junior high, I partied, you know, and I see little 12-year-olds now, and I think, oh my God, that was me. You know, I drank 4 or 5 times a week, and, you know, drugs are a part of my story. You know, I'll respect Alcoholics Anonymous, so I'll just add the extras. You know, it was either extras and I ate a lot, or extras and I didn't eat for a week, one or the other, you know. And I did it all. I did it all. And when I was in 10th grade, my family moved us to South America, and I was, that really changed my life. I went away there, and I didn't speak the language, and there was no drinking age, and I just kind of lost myself. I gained a bunch of weight. I'd never been heavy before, and I got in with the wrong people, and it just was a bad experience for me, and I don't think I ever recovered from that. I came back to the States my senior year, and I don't know what happened to me, but I never felt the same. I belonged in Alcoholics Anonymous by then. I was drinking all the time and doing the other things, and I went away to college. My parents believed that you should get a college education, and they paid for everything. And I went up to Western Michigan, which is known as a big party school. And, of course, they were okay with people with 2.0 GPA. So I didn't do very well in school. I was one of those. I either did outstanding at school, or I did terrible at school. And it really didn't have anything to do with how smart I was. I was always very capable. It had to do if I was depressed or not. If I was depressed, I did very bad at school, and if I was happy, I, you know, was a straight-A student. But anyways, I went away to college, and I did what a lot of us do. I never went to class, so obviously I didn't do real well in school. I drank all the time and partied, and you know, after a year I failed my racquetball course, and my dad said, "That's it, you know, that's it." And he told me to go get a trade, and so I went to beauty school, and I was not a beauty school dropout. I actually graduated, and you know, I always saw myself as some big executive woman. You know, my dad was an executive and wore a blue suit, and my first year of college, actually, I went to school to be an electrical engineer. Now, I don't do very well at math, but my dad was an electrical engineer, and I wanted him to like me. It was my quest. And he wasn't a hairdresser, so he wasn't real thrilled that I was getting that. But anyways, I went to beauty school, and, you know, like a lot of us girls do, you know, it was time to get married. I figured I wasn't going to be a you know, some big executive somewhere, so I might as well be a housewife. So I conveniently found myself a man. He had everything I was looking for and everything my dad was not interested in. He had a trailer, which my husband loves. He had a wife, and he had a kid. Perfect. Perfect. benefits. He really didn't like to work, and rarely did he have transportation unless I was buying him something, you know, because I wanted him to have a car at least to pick me up on a date. But anyways, you know, he and I got together, and it was just a crazy, crazy time. I was in my early 20s, and we were doing things that, you know, when I speak at the jail, you know, I can say to those girls, I belong here just like you, because I did things that, you know, running guns and crawling around in the ground in crops late at night. You can go to prison for a really long time. And, you know, I'm just so fortunate that I never got caught. I'm just so lucky. When I was in my early 20s, I came to Florida. My dad got really sick. My dad also got sober. He got sober, and he was a different man. And I was always envious because my little sister got a daddy that was sober. I was always very envious of her. And I didn't know what that word envy meant until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm grateful to say that that word really doesn't exist in my vocabulary today, because Alcoholics Anonymous helped me deal with all that envy I had. And anyways, I moved here, poor guy, dead sober, and here comes the 22-year-old. Also, my brother arrived. He had a drinking problem also. His name's Ryan, and I'll share a little bit about him in a little bit. But we all arrived on the scene to rock their world. They had a nice little content life, and we came here to rock it. And after about 3 weeks laying in his pool naked, floating around, he had a discussion with me that this was not going to continue any longer. I was having a great time. It was a lot of fun. I had a beautiful tan, no tan line, and I was having fun. And he announced that I would be getting a job soon, or I'd be going back to Michigan, and he would even help me get a job. Now, I already could imagine the job he would get me, you know, corporate executive, blue suit, making $100,000 easy a year. You know, I did go to college for a little bit, but no, he got me a waitress job in Sanford. I had to get up like 4 in the morning, and anybody that knows me, I'm not a morning person unless I've been up all night. And I went to work there, didn't like that very well, and so I got myself a job down on International Drive, cutting hair in a salon there. And you know, I was going to change my life. You know, I'm a mover, and I'm going to change. I'm going on a diet. I'm going to read some books, and things are going to be different. I'm great at that. And so that's why more about alcoholism is my story. I'm always nodding my head when they read off the list of things you've done to try to control your drinking. And I ended up meeting this woman that was a bartender at Fridays. It was very convenient. She knew tons of people. And I got a hairdressing job at this new, it was by when Windermere just became the hot spot. And I got myself a job at a cocktail bar and a cocktail waitress. And I just had the time of my life. I did things I said I never would do, but it was fun. I had so much fun. I take airplanes and we go to the Bahamas, and we just do crazy, crazy, crazy things. And my poor dad, of course, I was still living with him and driving home wasted every night, and he'd be there after his AA meeting seeing me arrive, and he would tell me, you're going to get a DUI, matter of time. And he was right. The day came. He was pacing. He intuitively knew where I was, and I was in jail. And my mother, being the good queen of denial that she is, she announced that I would spend the night at my girlfriend's. I was not in jail. But she picked me up in the morning from the clink, and we drove up and down Amelia, which I just drove by the other day and thought, yep, that's where the car was parked. Looking for my car, I ran in the back of a vehicle. I'd left the scene, and some guy, big, ugly, disgusting guy, got me off the road. Of course, I offered a little negotiation deal with him not to call the police, which he didn't do, thank God, but called the police, and, you know, I went to jail with a hit and run, leaving the scene. You know, I blew like a 2.8, something like that, and I went to the lawyer, and the lawyer said, find the car, which I didn't know where it was, because it was on Amelia, so you can go on this side of Amelia, and that's where the good girls go. And you can go on that side of Amelia, and that's where the bad girls go. And so I would not take my mom on that side of Amelia, because there's no way her daughter would ever go there. But, of course, that's right where my car was. So, of course, it was right across from the Parliament House, which really freaked her out. not only was her daughter an alcoholic and drug addict, but now she might be a lesbian. I mean, she was really freaked out. I told her not to worry. That was not a problem. So, anyways, that was my first introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous. The lawyer recommended that I come here. And so I went to Pine Hills Grace Group. I got a sponsor, I guess. My husband and I met her about 5 years ago, and she announced she was my sponsor, and I remember. And she said, "You always look kind of spacey." And I'm thinking, well, I was wasted all the time, you know? I mean, who goes to AA at 22 and stays sober? Not me. But if you're here and you're 20, 22, 15, 16, you don't have to do what I did. Because now I'll get ready to tell you about another 5 minutes of all the horror when I just could have stayed. Just could have stayed, but I didn't. I was too young. You were too old. You were a cult. And I was never going to have fun again. And so I went on Tuesdays and Thursdays. I met a nice guy, of course. And we would meet Tuesdays and Thursdays, and then we would go to JB Sports Bar and drink and talk about how weird you all were. And that year, my dad died. And I pretended with him that I was sober. I mean, I know now he knew I wasn't sober. I meet people all the time that tell me they're sober and they're wasted, and I can tell you stink, okay? I mean, I didn't think vodka smelled. But it does. It permeates from your skin, and it's pretty stinky. And if you drink a couple beers, then you really can tell. And anyways, but I told him that I was sober, and I played the game with him. And it was the only time that he and I had anything in common. He finally had something to talk to me about. He was so excited for me, and I played the game. And, you know, when he died, you know, that guilt just killed me. And I would like to tell you that I went to his funeral and that I was, you know, a participant in that, and that I helped my mom and helped my sister and, you know, did the right thing. But that's not what I did. I went and quit my job. I went up to this little hick town that he was buried at, and, you know, I just partied like a wild woman and stayed out all night and caused all kinds of grief. And, you know, I didn't do the right thing. And when I came back, you know, I just hated myself. I hated myself, one, because I just was no longer capable of ever doing the right thing, even though I wanted to. You know, I didn't want to be the irresponsible daughter. I wanted to be a good daughter, but I just couldn't quit drinking. And it never occurred to me that, you know, maybe I should go to AA. Worked for my dad, but, you know, I just didn't want to be here. And so that year I tried to kill myself. And, you know, I'm grateful that it didn't work, obviously, because I'm still here. But that would start the adventure of that, you know, I definitely had an alcohol problem. And I finally came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I stayed. Well, sort of. I came to AA. I got a sponsor. I sort of worked the steps. And I moved up to DeLand. I got a college education. You know, I got a really good job. After about a year, I didn't like the AA up there. It was, you know, a bunch of rednecks. And, you know, I always had an excuse why I didn't need to be here. But I wasn't drinking, so I didn't need you guys. I could do this alone, you know. And I got my life together, and things were good. They were really good. And in the book, it talks about that, you know, there will come a time. And if you do not have a spiritual defense against that drink, that you will drink again. And it also talks about that you can go a long period of time without drinking, and that idea will come to you. And in the book, it talks about the one guy that was dead within 3 years. And, you know, that's my story. I wasn't dead within 3 years, but when I was about 5 years sober, I was on a trip with a guy. He was a really nice man. I had a great job, beautiful home, just bought a car. I mean, things were good. And I said, pull over. And he said, what for? And I said, I'm 32 years old. I'm a grown woman. I've done my fourth step on my dad. I got no issues. I'm going to drink. And within 6 months, everybody I loved was begging me to please quit. And, you know, More About Alcoholism talks about that, you know, sometimes we got to go try some controlled drinking to really be convinced that we got this thing. And it says that, you know, a bad case of jitters is worth it. Well, I did more than jitter, okay? I was jittering all over the world. But, you know, that 6 years I spent doing things that I said I would never do, you know, I ate sometimes, and sometimes I didn't eat. You know, I drank every day. I lost that really good job. I wandered from job to job, from man to man. You know, I was always looking outside of myself for the answer, and then the only solution I had was to drink. It was a terrible place to be, and, you know, the book also talks about the incomprehensible demoralization and the loneliness that no one knows like an alcoholic, and I see you guys shaking your heads. So, you know, no one knows it, that loneliness, and I've seen it in the eyes of people I love that I haven't been able to help, but that loneliness was there, and I don't know why on January 25th was no different than any other day. I got to AA in October. I was with a man, and he told me that I was an alcoholic, and he was going to Al-Anon, and if I didn't quit drinking, he would marry me. And so I went to AA, I used to go to Pine Hills Grace Group, and I would go on, I think it was Tuesday night, they had a men's meeting there at 6, and I would get a Slurpee and put my vodka in there, and then I would go in into the men's meeting, and I would tell them how I was with this guy from Al-Anon, and, you know, that I wasn't drinking, and I just wish he'd get off my ass, and then I'd cry, and I'd leave. You know, and those men never once said, this is a men's meeting, get out of here. Or never once said, shut up, you're psycho. But they just let me come and talk. And I only went there like 4 or 5 times. I did get the opportunity to see one of the guys about 5 years ago. And I said to him, do you remember that psycho blonde that used to come to your men's meeting? You know, like, I don't know, that was 6 years ago. And he's like, yeah, she was crazy. Why, do you know her? And I go, yeah, that was me. And he's like, no way. And I, you know, I thanked him. I thanked him for never kicking me out. Thank God Tradition 3 is in place that, you know, we only need to have a desire to stop drinking. And I'm careful when someone comes in here all crazy that I don't ask them to leave because they're disturbing me. That I let them stay because it may be the door that needs to stay open for them, that they know they can come here no matter how nuts you are, you know. And my husband, when we get here, we pull up, he always goes, welcome to the nut ward. So if you don't think you're crazy, sorry, you might be. But anyways, I landed here finally. That's what I finally got here. I was broken. There was a man chairing the meeting, and it was a Super Bowl Sunday, I believe, and he was a skinny little guy, and he was sharing about how he'd been in and out of the rooms for years, and he couldn't get it, and that today was his anniversary date. And for some reason, I've heard people say stuff like that for years, but at that moment, that time, he hooked me. At that moment, that time, I believed him, and I've never left. I've never left. He said, if you're new, keep coming back, and if you, you know, don't leave before the miracle happens. And, you know, he introduced himself to me, and I got a white chip, and gave me a newcomer's packet, and he told me some women to call. And, you know, that guy did not know that day, chairing that meeting, that he was going to be the guy that would change my life forever. And that's why I always chip at people who are chairing, because often when we're chairing, we're the only person that newcomer sees. And that was the beginning. It was the beginning of my journey. I got a sponsor after 30 days. I did ask a couple women to sponsor me, and they told me no. And I believe the reason they told me no is because they had watched me come in and out of here since October, and they didn't think I was serious. And that's okay. God sent me the woman I needed to be with. She was pretty, smart, drove a nice car, had a big, huge house, and she was married. She had everything I wanted. And I'm so glad for her because she was not afraid to tell me the truth. And we got busy. I told her, I've already worked steps 1, 2, and 3. I did 4 several years ago. And so let's just go ahead and go to 5. And she told me that I was not the sponsor and I didn't know shit, is what she said to me. She also did that thing where you open the book and you go, you want to know what you know? It's on the first page. And then you open it and there's nothing there. She did all kinds of stuff like that to me. But anyway, she said, we will start on step 1, go read and whatever. And I met her and I did some work. And, you know, we read the book. And I didn't comprehend any of it. So, you know, if you're new and someone tells you to read, if you don't get it, it's okay. It's just the idea that maybe you're willing to read. And hopefully if you have a sponsor, they're going to read the book with you. And if you still don't get it, that's okay, because you're going to have lots of opportunities to read the book. But I started reading the book. And she had me do some exercises. You know, everybody's different, but I wrote some stuff down about being powerless and my life being unmanageable. And she also had me write When I Saw God. And it was apparent that my life was unmanageable, and it was apparent that I was powerless. And she told me that step three, I didn't have to believe in anything but a group of drunks. And I had a little dog, and I loved my dog. And she told me that, you know, God was dog spelled backwards, and that God loved me like that dog loved me. And there's a part in the book that says, you know, we have a new employer and we have a new father. And, you know, I got to that, and I'm like, I'm not interested in that. I don't want him to be my father because I hate my father. And, she said that was fine. You know, I didn't have to pick that part. Today God's my father, and my father's my father, and whatever. It doesn't matter to me, but then it just needed to be simple. And she told me it was really about making a decision to do the rest of the work, and that's exactly what I did. And I did step four. I did not understand it. The book says, you know, in five, you know, after writing this stuff down, we've got a pretty good idea of what's wrong with us, and I didn't have any idea what was wrong with me. There was nothing wrong with me. I had a drinking problem. Quit drinking, everything's going to be fine. So I did step five with her, and I shared with her all my deep, dark secrets, which I want you to know today are my greatest assets. I'm not afraid. I mean, I'm not going to stand up here and tell you all my deep, dark secrets only because my husband's here and there's a room full of men. But if there's a room full of girls, I do it, which I have, and then I find out they tape me, and then I got to tell them, oh, God, honey, I'm really sorry, but it's all over the United States. Anyways, I told him I was a virgin when I met him anyways, and he believes me. I did my fifth step, and when we got done, she asked me to, she said, I'm going to step aside for a little bit, and I want you to write down your, you know, read the proposals and whatever, and I want you to write down your character defects. So I was writing, and she came back, and she said to me, so what'd you come up with? And I'm like, well, I'm hard on myself, and I need to lose 10 pounds, and, you know, I talk loud. And she's like, oh, Jesus Christ, Robin, excuse my language. She said, you're a slut, you're lazy. She just went on and on. Said all this mean stuff to me. And I'm so grateful for it, because at that moment, that second, I believed her, and it was the truth, and she set me free. I was no longer a victim of my life. My problems were no longer your fault. I was able, for that second, to see that I'm the one that made a mess of my life. And since then, I've been free of blaming you for the problems in my life. I mean, I've been set free from that. And, you know, we got busy. I made a list of the people I'd harmed. There was a bunch of them I didn't know, because when she told me originally to write down, you know, who you're mad at, I told her I don't have any resentments. I'm not mad at anybody. I love everyone. And she said, fine, how about who hurt you? And I'm like, oh my God, there's like a lot of people. So I had a very long list. I didn't know when I wrote that list that I would be like transferring that to my eight. But I did. I transferred that to my eight. We wrote some letters. We talked about what my part was. And I was willing to do whatever I had to for those promises. You know, I don't do anything unless I get something. But I love the promises, the idea of not being afraid of people anymore, of intuitively knowing how to handle things. Financial insecurity, I don't know if anybody that's really happened for. I'm still waiting on it. I'm working on it. But anyways, I went out and I made amends. You know, I went to the people I love most, and I did not say to them, I am sorry. I went to them and told them specifically what I was aware of what I did to them, and then I asked them what I could do to make up for it. And most of the people I went to said, Robin, just please don't drink again. You know, just please don't drink again. So when the idea of a drink sounds good or a glass of Chardonnay looks sexy, you know, I hear my mom say, just don't drink again, honey, and it takes it away. And so I did that, and then steps 10, 11, and 12, I was told were my maintenance steps, and, you know, I do all 12 steps on a daily basis, only to stay sane. I really don't want to drink today, but I want to stay sane, and so I go to a lot of meetings, and I work with others, and, you know, I pray every morning, and I read those little books, and sometimes I don't, and when I don't, my day sucks, and I try to figure out why, and then I know why, and You know, I have a sponsor. I've always had a sponsor that has guided me, and she always gives me some ideas of some things to say, and it's very simple. You know, I start my day out on my knees asking God, thanking God for another day, and then asking Him to help me stay sober. And I ask Him to be the woman He wants me to be, and I ask Him to help another alcoholic. And then I say the third step prayer because Brett, you know Brett, he taught it to me. And so I say that rotely. I say it because I have it memorized. And then I say a few things to help my husband and I because we need help, right, honey? And then I go on my day. I keep it real simple. I talk to God throughout the day. God is my friend. You know, my sponsor told me to make my God up. It was, that's what she said understands means, that it is I can make my own higher power, whatever it is. And so my God is funny. My God believes masturbation is all right. You know, my God. Oh, you guys, well, I had to throw one in there. Sorry, kids. You know, my God is my friend. My God expects me to make errors on a daily basis. The only thing is that He hopes I learn from them and then I share them with another. You know, my God is huge and roomy, and it's changed. You know, every day it gets different. And you know, I want to share a couple things that have happened in this journey of mine. You know, I step 12. You know, they told me I couldn't work with anybody. Taking them through the steps till I did step 12. And when I first got here, I didn't do step 12 very well as far as sponsorship. I used to go down to OBT and beat on the doors to get my girls out. And I would buy them food and clothes and get them apartments. And, you know, I did everything you weren't supposed to do. Even though my sponsor was going, don't do it, I did it anyways because I knew better. And I wasn't very good at it in the beginning. But thank God for sponsorship, you know, and finally listening to what they had to say and getting into the big book. You know, my life has changed because of the women in my room. I can look around. I'm not going to look at you because you're going to make me cry, but I can look around the room and see women that I have had the opportunity to work with, and it is just such an amazing feeling to be able to be there and watch them get it, you know, to watch them when I call them a slut and a thief and all of those things, and they smile at me too and say thank you and get it. And I've been able to watch girls mend their families. You know, so many of us come in here broken and we've destroyed the people we love, and we wonder if they'll ever love us again. All right, I wasn't going to cry. But I have not only personally had an opportunity to make amends to my family and redevelop those relations, but I've also been a part of watching these women do it, and it is just amazing. I would never want to drink to give that away, to give that opportunity away. So, you know, if you're new and you're here and your family hates you, I promise that if you do the work, they won't. They won't. And that's been my experience. My first 3 years of sobriety were wonderful. I went to a meeting every day. I took that 90 and 90 very serious. If you do the math, I was here for 900 and some days at least. But I loved it here. It made me so happy. I was safe. I loved to go to the bars. I was a bar fly, so, you know, I just changed it to Central. And, you know, I came here every day, and, you know, I did the work, and I've worked with women, and I watched a lot of people go through, you know, things. I saw a gentleman, you know, with cancer, another girl that had cancer, and I watched people, you know, their children died, and I had a girl that was a friend of mine, and her mom died the first month she was sober, and she didn't drink. And, you know, I heard you guys say that, you know, my sister died yesterday, and I'm not going to drink no matter what. You know, I mean, I watched a lot of the old-timers start to go through life, and they just shared how they didn't drink. And I got a phone call that my brother had been killed, and, you know, I later found out that he was, you know, alcoholism. It's a circle family disease that never goes away. It is yet to leave mine. And he was beaten to death by his stepson, and my niece got to watch it, and it was devastating. It tore our family apart, but there was something great that took place, and from that experience I have learned that in every tragedy there's something wonderful. That, and on a bad day, there was a kid here today that was having a bad day, and I wanted to say to him, there's something good in that bad day, because I learned from that experience that when things are bad, there's something good, you know. And if anything, it's just an opportunity for me to suit up and show up and give back to my family what I used to take from them, you know, to be responsible. And it was the first time I ever felt like a woman. It was the first time I ever felt like I had become somebody. And I was able to suit up and show up. I came here first because I watched. That's what you guys did. You guys came here when it happened, and you would cry or scream or whatever, and then everybody would tell you no matter what, you don't drink, and you're going to be okay, and call us, and, you know, that's what I did. And I went to that funeral, and I was not mean to the kid that killed him. I knew he was sick, too. And I got to suit up and show up and finally be there for my mother, you know, and be there for my sister. And I got to make up to my dad what I didn't do when he died. And I am very sad that my brother died, but I can tell you that that made me such a better person. And, you know, he was in the grips of alcoholism, too, and I wanted to help him, but I couldn't. I couldn't because he wasn't interested. And, you know, today he's in a better place. You know, he's up there with my dad and my grandmother, and he's selling cars, and they're probably on a garage sale today, knowing them. And if they can drink in heaven, they're drinking, I promise you. But anyway, so I had that experience happen, and then I got one more I want to share, and then I'll tell you a couple good stories. That little dog I told you about, I love to tell this story only because, well, it's cute. It's a cute story, sad story, cute. But that little dog I had the first time I prayed, my sponsor told me I had to pray, and I was not interested in praying at all. And she said, I want you to go home, and I want you to get on your knees and put your keys under the bed or your shoes. That's what they always tell you, right? So I went home and did it, and I called her up, and I said, this is not going to work. And she said, why? And I said, because the dog's watching me. And it's very, very uncomfortable. And she said, oh, for God's sakes, Robin, that dog has watched you. And then she listed all the stuff the dog has watched. I was mortified. But, you know, she knew me. And so she said, the dog is very happy that you're praying. She prayed. So I had this dog, and that poor dog, you know, I had white carpet, and if you're a drunk, you know, you don't walk your dog, and that I destroyed that carpet, and that poor dog, I have not been a very good mother to that dog, but that dog was with me through it all. You know, I came to AA, I brought that dog with me. That dog was the one that said my husband was okay. She didn't like men at all, and she kissed him the first time she saw him. But I brought that dog to all the parties. I brought the dog to the first picnic, so everybody would talk to me. She was so cute. She was really cute. But she got sick, and she died. And I was so devastated. And thank God I had a new sponsor at that time, and she had a dog that had died. And she told me how devastating it was for her, too. And she said, I want you to go to the meeting and talk about it. You know, no different than when my brother died. It was the same thing. Something I loved died. And, you know, I came to the meeting that night, talked about it, you know, and it was amazing how many people cried, even you guys cried, because the love of that, I loved that dog, and I felt so guilty because I cried more for that dog than I did for my brother. I was so devastated over it, but, you know, I didn't drink, you know, because I'm the kind of person, I'll drink if I break my shoelace or my hair didn't come out right or, you know, I ran my pantyhose and, you know, and I didn't have to drink. And I got two new dogs, you know, because I do everything extreme now. So after the loss, and I got two, which my husband loves, you should see him with them. But, you know, since I've done this journey, I've been able to go all over the place and do all kinds of things, and, you know, we have a beautiful home that I've got to work on, and, you know, I'm still married after 7 years, me, in the same relationship. He was the only guy I ever kissed since I've been sober. Is that scary or what? And we've had our ups and downs. You know, my sponsor told me not to get in a relationship until I worked my steps, and I'm glad she didn't say a year.
So I got busy right away. I spotted him the first day I got here, and I got busy. But, you know, I did things different, which I never had. You know, I said no, and I made him wait, and we became friends, and, you know, I did things different, and I have some self-esteem today, and he shared my priority list with you, you know, that AA comes first, because I gotta have AA or I forget about God, and then my sponsor and my girls. You know, I hated women when I got here, and I always say the guys will pat your ass and the women will save it, and that's very true. I've been so lucky to have all these women in my life that we understand each other. No, we do not understand you men, I promise you. But we understand each other, and we can help each other. You know, I still call 3 women a day like I was told to do in the very beginning, not because I have to, because I want to. I want to know how you're doing. And you care about what I'm doing. I am no longer envious of a friend with success. I'm so happy for her. And I'll do anything I can to help her achieve more. And, you know, and then my family. I have been able to rebuild my family. I have 2 beautiful nephews that I love, and they love me. They've never seen me drunk. I'm their favorite aunt, and I love that. And I can suit up and show up for them. And, you know, I always say to my sister, like, when they leave for 9 days, I'm like, God, I must have really been an asshole. You know, these 9-step amend things, you know, these living amends. What about just a weekend? But I take them for 9 days if I have to. And, you know, I have a niece that was my brother's sister, and I lost her in the process of the death and the jail and the legal crap and all of that stuff. She's pretty much disappeared out of my life. But, you know, I was able to do that with Alcoholics Anonymous. I was able to let her go, you know, to let her go and know that maybe someday she'll come back, you know. You know, and then I have my family, like I said, that I love, and my husband, and I have all of you here. I'm so blessed that I have a safe place to go, you know, that when I'm happy, I can come here and share it with you, and when I'm sad, I can come here and cry in the corner, and you guys tell me I'm going to be okay. And I want to end with a reading of mine, and then I'll be done. This comes from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's that blue book. I had a girl the other day that said she thought it was a Bible. And it is kind of our Bible. I've been told it's a textbook. I've been told that the answers to all my problems are in here. And I believe that's true. There's a part that says, you know, troubles are of our own making, even though we don't think so. I don't like that one. But anyways, here's this reading. It comes from the Keys to the Kingdom. And it says, AA is not a plan of recovery that can be finished and done with. It is a way of life. And the challenges contained in its principles is great enough to keep any human being striving for as long as we live. We do not and cannot outgrow this plan. As arrested alcoholics, we must have a program for living that allows for limitless expansion. Keeping one foot in front of the other is essential for maintaining our arrestments. Others may idle in retrogressive groove without too much danger, but retrogression can spell death for us. However, this isn't as rough as it seems, as we do become grateful for the necessity that makes us toe the line, and we find that we are compensated for consistent effort by the countless dividends we receive. A complete change takes place in our approach to life. Where we used to run from responsibility, we find ourselves accepting it with gratitude that we can successfully shoulder it. Instead of waiting to escape some perplexing problem, we experience the thrill of the challenge and the opportunity it affords for another application of AA's techniques, and we find ourselves tackling it with surprising vigor. And then the lady writes, the last 15 years of my life have been rich and meaningful. I've had my share of problems, heartaches, and disappointments, because that is life. But also I've known a great deal of joy and a peace that is handmaiden of an inner freedom. I have a wealth of friends, and with my AA friends, an unusual quality of fellowship. For to these people I am truly related, first through mutual pain and despair, and later through mutual objectives and newfound faith and hope. And as the years go by, working together, sharing our experiences with one another, and also sharing a mutual trust, understanding, and love, without strings, without obligations, we require relationships that are unique and priceless. There is no more aloneness with that awful ache.
so deep in the heart of every alcoholic that nothing before could ever reach it. The ache is gone and may never need to return. And now there is a sense of belonging, of being wanted, needed, and loved. In return for a bottle and a hangover, we've been given the keys to the kingdom. Thank you.